Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeffrey Appaport.
And today, guys, we got a special guest on the line by the name of Adam Hall. He is a fellow investor here in Utah and a general contractor. Are you still a licensed general contractor, Adam?
Yes.
Cool. So Adam's a fellow listener of our show, and I think you've kind of started from the first episode, haven't you, Adam?
Yeah, I didn't hear about it until like April of 2019-ish, I think is about when I heard that you were doing it. And so started at episode one and have been listening to, I think I've got them all now. So
cool. So glad to hear it. You've kind of reached out to me and commented on our podcast. We've met, I don't know, a number of years back at a investor meeting or something. So in our recent conversation, you've mentioned that in the last 3 months, you've bought some seller finance deals. And then you just mentioned that you got one going on. So I want to dive into that a little later. But you also mentioned that since listening to the podcast, you've kind of, ramped up the creative financing stuff that you do, or you've been more motivated to pursue that. So how has listening to the show and learning some of the other strategies influenced your business right now?
You summed it up pretty well right there with saying listening to it has brought it back to the forefront of my mind as a good solution for properties. And I've had, like you said, a couple of them recently where I've been able to purchase them that they were homes that, So the one house, I had seller financing on my brain. It was kind of there. I had a real estate agent call me and was like, hey, I've got this house that I want to do as a flip project, and the people are willing to do seller financing on it. I know you know more about it than I do. Can you help me set this up as a seller financing flip? And after kind of running through the numbers with him, I was like, dude, this sounds like an excellent way to lose your shorts. There's not enough spread in here to make this viable. But if you'll kind of hook me up with the sellers, I'll give you a few $1,000 as a referral fee. And so we did. Sellers, by the time they sold, paid their agents and everything, it was going to cost them a couple $1,000 to be able to sell the house. They'd only been in the house like a year. Dude had lost his job. And so I came in, looked at it as a rental, and was like, hey, I'll give you like 12 grand to just let me take over your mortgage and walk away. And so they were like, that sounds fabulous to us. They took we ended up settling on like 13,000, a little more than 12, and they paid their agent like 6 grand out of that. So he was doing the listing for like 2.5% commission, and it's off of a $300,000 house. And so by the time he would have split it with his broker, he ended up with just about as much as he would have got had he sold it normally. And they got way more than they were going to get. And it came together quite nicely. I turned around and put it up as a rent to own property, and now have some people in it that are paying way more than what the market rent for the neighborhood would have been, and are in a 3-year lease. So I think just having the podcast, listening to the podcast, that all went down in July. And so I'd been listening to you guys for a couple months at that point. And so really had it on the top of my mind. So when that guy called, it was all right there, ready to go in my brain. So
cool.
Thank you.
Hey Adam, can I follow up on this example? 'Cause I think it's a great one that we can, you know, point some things out. So, so you bought the property. How did you buy it? Did you buy it subject to or all inclusive or contract for deed? How'd you buy it?
Just straight subject to.
Okay. So you took over existing debt. What was your payment? Do you remember?
It is $1,689.
Okay.
Just shy of $1,700.
Okay. And what's the ARV, do you think, on this property?
Real close to $300. A house just across the street from it sold for $310. So
okay.
Really not much equity there.
So you had, you know, 13-ish thousand in. I imagine you had to cover some closing costs for the seller, maybe, you know, for you, whatever. So you lease optioned it out. So you're now the owner. The debt's still in the seller's name. What were the terms on the lease option? So what kind of option deposit did you get up front?
So they put $5,000 down as the option deposit.
Okay.
And then rents and houses in the neighborhood were renting between $1,600 and $1,800. We'd been advertising it as $10,000 down. These people showed up and said, hey, we can't do $10,000, but we can do more than $1,700 a month for rent.
Okay.
I asked them how much more, and they said probably a little more than $2,000. Asked them again, how much more than that? And they said $2,100. And I said, that'll do.
Okay.
So they locked that in for a 3-year lease that they are going to purchase at the appraised value at the end of that 3-year period.
Okay. So you still got a little money in it, but not a lot, right? So you've got $8,000 or so in it. But you're getting $500 a month cash flow, or $350, somewhere in that range, right? Which pretty good if you figure out the cash on cash return. You know, you're probably around 50% or so. And you bought it for how much?
About 280.
$280.
That was like 267.
So you've got some equity. And the house needs some work, right?
Nothing. We didn't even send a cleaner into it.
Okay, good. So it was ready to go, and it'll probably appraise, you know, in 3 years, who knows, 310, 320.
I would guess, yeah, or a little north of that.
So. Yeah. So, and then you'll get paid the difference of what is still owing on the underlying mortgage, and what, do they get any kind of rent credit for paying more? Or is that going toward their option deposit? Or
yeah, I'm giving them $300 a month towards their option deposit.
Okay, so if they buy, which is always the interesting part with a lease option, and maybe in this case you don't even want them to. Who knows? But yeah, so they'll gain about $10,000 over the next 3 years toward their option deposit. They've already got $5,000 down. And then you'll get the difference between what they still owe you and what you owe the underlying mortgage.
Yep.
And you get the tax benefit.
Mm-hmm.
For not a whole lot of money out of your pocket.
Well, actually no money out of my pocket, because I called a buddy and said, hey, I've got this deal together. You feel like doing a second mortgage for $13,000? And
there you go. Yeah. I love it.
Even better.
Do you make payments on that, or is it something that he gets paid at the end?
The original agreement was that I'd make payments, but he has since asked me to not make payments until after the first of the year. And so
it's okay.
Like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. Awesome. So I love the creativity. I mean, you used a number of different techniques, and I mean, these kinds of deals are, you know, especially if you have, and you didn't use any of your own money, but even if you had to, and worst case scenarios, you had $8,000 into this, and you're making, let's say, $350 net a month, you know, that is a 50% return on your investment, and not a terrible way to go. And this one didn't have much equity, and the sellers ended up getting money that they wouldn't have gotten normally. And you're one of a handful of people that was able to put all this together. So nice job.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, Jonathan, I thought that was a good opportunity to dive a little deeper.
Yeah, I'm just kicking back enjoying this right now. No, that's a great example. And you think about like how many of those leads are out there where, you know, someone bought a house 6 months ago, a year ago, they lost their job, or, you know, some medical circumstance come along and they need to sell their house. And with, you know, if they were to go the traditional route, put it on the market, they're going to lose money, like you said, Adam, right? They're going to be paying out of their own pocket to sell the property. And that just doesn't work for someone who is, you know, financially hurting anyways. So yeah, I'm glad you dived into that, Jeff, because that's, you know, just going over that example, this is probably one of the easier creative financing deals out there that you can do. And I like that you turned around and, you know, sold it on a lease option. And are your tenant buyers, are they responsible for any repairs, maintenance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so on the lease, I set it up that they'd be responsible for any individual repairs that are less than $3,500 per repair. And then I would take care of anything over $3,500, which anything over that that is not tenant caused would be an insurance claim. So,
gotcha. Yeah, excellent. So you really, you don't have any risk. I mean, especially since you borrowed the down payment anyway, there's no risk to you really, or at least it's very small. So I know you've done some other deals. Jeff, did you want to, you got any other questions for him?
No, that was great. I thought that was an opportunity to, it's always good to get different perspectives of how people try to structure deals. And this was something that, did you have this idea in your mind from the very start, Adam, that, you know, you wanted to somehow, you know, buy this subject to, but did you have, hey, I already have in my mind the exit strategy of how I would handle this?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've kind of ran the numbers enough on it to know that eventually it would pay off. I mean, just between the mortgage the property appreciation and the mortgage pay down. And so that was what I had in mind, is really being the only viable solution for this. I mean, just turning around and trying to sell it on the market or something wasn't working for them. There's no reason to think it would start working for me. And so.
Cool. You know, just one last thought, and then we can move on, is that one of the things that I really like about what you did here is that, so one of the negative parts of using a lease option is, at least in our market, and tell me if you see this as being any different, is really the best you can hope to get is maybe 3% of the purchase price. On some select occasions, you might get a little more than that, but you're pretty much in that 3%-ish area. And in this case, what you were able to do is even take less than that and still make it a good, profitable, workable deal. So now the amount of buyers, tenant buyers that you have access to is even more, because you're able to take a small amount of money. And what's really the risk? I mean, it doesn't work out, so you evict them. You made $5,000 in whatever cash flow, and you just go do it all over again, right? So I liked how you structured it, because there was very little. I mean, you could just have rented this property. I don't know how long of a term that you have. Is there a term that you told the sellers, hey, I'm going to leave this loan in place and then cash it out, or, hey, I've got whatever?
Yeah, it was, I will make payments on this for another 350 months. So.
Okay, so you've got the length of the loan. Yeah. So it could have been a rental for you. It could have been a lease option. You could have sold it back on terms. I mean, you just got a ton of options. And that's what I love about creative financing, is that you can create so many options. You know, plan A doesn't work out quite the way you want, you got plan B and C.
Right. Adam, what did you do to find a buyer, a tenant buyer for that? So if someone goes out there, they find someone in the same scenario, they say, hey, we can, you know, we can buy this house and take over your existing mortgage. How do they go and find a tenant buyer?
Just advertised on the local online classified stuff. There's KSL and then Facebook. We did, and then did like a Facebook post on my Facebook page, the Peace of Mind Houses Facebook page, and then boosted that to the local area, to, like, everybody that was between, I don't know, like 25 years old and 45 was kind of the demographic that I figured would be living in that neighborhood. And so just picked that age bracket and boosted the post to those people. And that's these people that ended up finding it, I'm not sure where they found it online somewhere. And then we also have rent to own signs that we put out that I've got another property right now that the signs have been drawing a lot more people than the online presence. This particular property, it was the online presence that.
Yeah. And I know Jeff, you put out signs anytime you, you're looking for a tenant buyer like that.
Yep. Really? Yeah. Because we find the same thing. So as long as the signs will stay up and you don't have any issues with the city, sometimes you got to just do it, you know, weekends, like any kind of banded sign. But they do attract a lot of calls. I like both personally.
Yeah. I just wanted to make that point, just, you know, to kind of polish that off for our audience out there in case they come across a deal like this. So what's another creative real estate deal you've done in the last month or two, Adam? Let's talk about another deal.
So we've got one that we'll be closing on tomorrow that it is going to be a flip project that we're buying that grandma and grandpa passed away. Kids, there's not a ton of equity in the house. We're just bringing in some cash to give them the cash and then taking over the property subject to the reverse mortgage that's on it. And the kids have 12 months or so to sell it after the last death. And so they're on board with the idea of, you know what, we will, when the lender calls to verify that something is happening with the property, they'll let them know that the property is being remodeled to be sold. And so that will, they're, it's really more like a partnership almost, but I don't even know what to. Anyway, they're going to be involved, and then they'll get a little bit of cash when it's all said and done. So that we're just trying to keep them involved and happy to help out with it. So we're taking the property subject to the reverse mortgage, going to do the remodel and put it up for sale and sell it. And
okay.
From there. Let's dive a little deeper in this.
Yeah.
You want to explain really quickly what a reverse mortgage is and what your, why this is maybe a little unique?
Yeah. So a reverse mortgage is something that you have to be, it's not income based at all, like most forward regular mortgages are. You have to be at least 62 years old in order to qualify for it. And then instead of making payments to the mortgage, like you do with a regular mortgage, the interest is just added to your principal balance each month. And so a senior couple may get a reverse mortgage for $70,000, and in 10 years, they now owe 85 or whatever it has grown up to. And each month, that balance goes a little higher. And they're able to live in the home without making any mortgage payments. I personally think they're a super great tool for senior citizens to use. My in-laws were that way. They had a regular mortgage on their house, had to make mortgage payments each month. And my father-in-law was super pushy about, he heard about a reverse mortgage. Back then I was a loan officer and I helped them do the loan, get the reverse mortgage. They got that. He passed away just a couple of months later. So she lost his Social Security income. And had they not had the reverse mortgage, she would have lost the house as well because she couldn't have made that regular mortgage payment. So because they got that, she's able to stay in the house until she passed away like 12 years later. And then we sold the house at, the mortgage balance was much higher than what it was when they started. So it's a great tool for that point. But the clause is that when the last borrower passes away, the heirs have 6 to 12 months to sell the house. Otherwise, it just goes to foreclosure, end of story. And so that's why we're keeping the sellers involved in this transaction, is because they have to be in order to communicate with the lender, because the lender will be following up with them every 2 to 3 months to make sure that there is progress on actually selling the property on the market.
So let's talk about that a little bit. How are they still tied to the property? Because you're taking it subject to the existing reverse mortgage. So title will be transferring to you, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So how are they still involved with the properties?
Are they? So I have an agreement with them that the lender will call and ask what is being done to market the property, or if the property is up for sale. At that, they'll tell them it's being remodeled and will be sold soon. And until we get done with it and get it sold, and then to compensate them for the help with that, they'll get some money at that point as well when the property does sell, kind of contingent upon how well we actually end up doing on it.
So they don't have any kind of like second trust deed on the property that actually secures their interest. It's kind of, is this a written agreement that you put in place with them?
Yep. It's nothing's recorded against the property. It's just an agreement between us.
So was there a standard sales and purchase agreement that was filled out that between you and the heirs?
So it gets a little more complicated than that even. So we're really diving off into the weeds on this one, but they're putting the property into a trust, and then I am buying the beneficial interest of the trust from them. So the ownership of the property is not going to change. They'll still be involved in the trust. Yeah. So the ownership of the property is not changing. It's the beneficial interest of the trust that is going to be changing.
And will they be a beneficiary as well? The sellers, the heirs?
I'm not sure exactly how we're going to have that set up. It may be some sort of split beneficial interest on it. We're still working out some, I mean, we haven't closed on this one yet. It's going to be later this week or next when we get all the details finally pounded out. I would prefer to not have them have a beneficial interest, but I honestly don't know how the legal guys are going to actually knock that down.
I would probably just write them a promissory note for whatever it is that you're telling them that they'll get, you know, if it's a certain percentage of profit or whatever it may be, and just do it that way. The last thing I'd want is I don't want to share that beneficial interest with the heirs to this property. I think there could be all kinds of potential issues, you know, when it's time to sell the property. And, you know, either that or, hey, here's a check, you're done. So one of the two is what I would recommend.
Yeah, definitely, if you can, buy out their entire beneficial interest so that they don't have any or percentage remaining as a beneficiary. That way that would fully secure you in that position.
Can we talk about like the key part of this whole thing? Is that Adam just negotiated a deal where, are you putting any money up front?
Again, bringing in a purchase money second. I got enough guys that are.
But you're bringing some money for the seller, right?
Yeah, bringing some money for the seller.
Okay. And so, which would be normal, whether you're getting hard money. I mean, almost always you're going to have some money into it unless you've got a, you know, good relationship with your hard money lender, but you got no payments, right? No payments while this is going on.
Correct.
That part is why I like the way that you structured this deal. So no holding costs other than, you know, maybe some utility costs. So really cuts down on those extra points and holding costs that you would incur if you had a hard money lender.
Yeah. What are you putting down, Adam, if you don't mind us asking, up front?
So the balance on the reverse mortgage is about $172,000.
Okay.
And then the heirs are going to be getting about $30,000 that we'll be bringing into the deal.
So upfront, they get that upfront just by placing the property in a trust and then assigning you as a beneficiary.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Cool. So no payments until you're done with this property. And then what do you know what they're going to be making on the back end, or is that something you're still negotiating?
Yeah. At this point, we've just said it's just been a couple thousand is really as close as we've defined it. We haven't put a specific number on there yet.
Okay. So you pretty much said, look, I'll take the property to the debt, the existing debt, which is 170. I'll give you guys 30 upfront to transfer title into a trust. And then I will pay you, a couple thousand bucks for your time in the middle. Is that pretty much?
Yeah.
That's pretty creative.
Yeah. And I would, that's the way it's structured. I would just give them a note. Hey, when the property closes within 48 hours of funding, I'll pay you guys this much more money for helping me out with the bank.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome. That's a great example. That's I don't know that we've really talked about buying reverse mortgage properties before, have we, Jeff?
We've talked briefly, just that you have a limited. So it's buying a reverse mortgage with creative financing only works short term.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's pretty much got to be either like a wholetail or a flip. It's not going to be something that you can use this financing for long term. And I think Adam's right on. To me, usually you have about a 6-month window of opportunity. You might be able to extend that maybe as much as 12 months. And if the heirs are in touch with the bank, they'll probably be a lot more flexible in terms of, as long as they know that they're trying to sell the property, they're not going to, if they found out that, hey, everyone's dead, no one's communicating, you're probably looking at 6 months. I think there's a certain amount of time before they can initiate the foreclosure process, and then you'd have to go through the actual foreclosure process, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, I believe you're right. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions you got on that, Jeff? Or
no, I think other than, if Adam, do you want to share hey, what's the property going to be worth when you're finished, and how much do you think you're going to put into it?
Yeah, so it will looking like it'll go for about 280, give or take a little bit, and then rehab on it, I'm looking at about $24,000. It's really light remodel. I mean, paint, carpet, and then right now it's a 4-bedroom, 1-bath house with a second bathroom roughed in. So we'll be building out 1 bathroom, and then just new paint, carpet, stuff like that through the rest of the house.
So it should be quick and easy.
Quick and easy, yeah. It's kind of unusual. Seems like most of the remodels I get into are anything but.
Yep.
And so.
Knock on wood. Let's hope this is quick and easy for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but just had a meeting with my construction team about an hour ago saying, okay, guys, let's make this one actually quick and easy.
There you go.
Anyway, looking at about 280 is the ARV on it, 24-ish on the remodel. There's no out-of-pocket holding costs, but, there will be the interest accruing on the reverse mortgage. It's roughly $800 a month at this point. So I'm looking to net out on it after everything, transaction costs, the whole shebang, right close to $20,000.
So it's a tight deal, but the reason that you're able to do it is because you created the financing. Otherwise, it really wouldn't make any sense cash-wise.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I were paying hard money costs on this, it is not something I would have got involved with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So, Adam, you're a general contractor. You just got your own guys that you pay hourly through your company that works on all your properties?
Yeah, that's bringing a lot of subs though as well. So, okay. I mean, yeah, probably more subcontractors that actually end up working on things than regular guys.
You don't do any of the work yourself, do you?
No, I don't. I always joke with people that my telephone's the only tool I operate.
You sound good.
Gotta love that.
Telephone and my lawnmower. I take my kids around to go mow lawns, and so that's about it.
That's good.
Pretty useless otherwise.
That's cool. How long have you been investing in real estate and particularly doing seller finance deals,
Adam? So I bought my first rental property back in 2003, and then just regular bank financing, and bought a couple over the next couple of years. And then in like 2005, I had this dude approach me and be like, "Hey, have you ever heard of seller financing?" And at the time I hadn't. He's like, "I want to buy a rental from you using a seller financing." And I'm like, "Sure, what the hell, why not?" Learn something new. And so he was offering more than I thought the property was worth, which I figured he was a sucker, and I was making off like a bandit from him. And so he gave me, it was like 10 grand down, and then made payments on it for, it's like 5 years, and then he ended up cashing it out. And so that was my first exposure to seller financing, and I've had various seller financing transactions off and on for many years. And over the last 4 years, really gotten much more consistent about looking for seller finance rental properties, and been able to build up a decent portfolio of seller finance rentals at this point.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's the best way to get them, right? Especially
at this point, I don't have anything else. And it's hilarious to me that I can buy multiple houses a month, but just buying them, but couldn't go get a mortgage for a teepee if I wanted to.
Okay. So are there any other, that should we talk maybe one more? I like these examples. When we get a whole different perspective, and it's something that we can kind of dive into and figure out what was going on through your mind when you put something together.
So a flip I bought a while ago, I'd had a lady contact me off one of my Facebook ads, and she's like, "Hey, I'm about to lose my house. I don't know what to do." And so I went out and met with her and kind of figured out what was going on with her house. And she hadn't made payments for nearly a year, but it was a really small mortgage. So she was only about 6 or 8 grand in arrears, and home needed a ton of work. And it was, I ended up paying her, I just paid her arrears and took the property subject to, and the mortgage balance was like $85,000. And we ended up putting almost $80,000. I mean, it was in bad shape, but she was really happy with that because we did that. And then, I mean, it took like from purchase to sell, it was like 7 months. She ended up with now 7 months of on-time mortgage payments that we made for her over that time period. So she was happy to have some good mortgage history before that house sold. And that sold just a couple weeks ago, and it ended up doing great on it. It sold it for like $255,000, and so was into it roughly $160,000 plus transactional costs and everything, and ended up netting out. It was the best flip I've ever done. I made the best money for that off of any. So it was great. I made just real close to $65,000 on that, and it was crazy. So
awesome, man.
One of the things I don't know if certainly sellers don't realize this, and maybe some investors don't either, but when you come across someone that's in default and they're facing potential foreclosure, a lot of the sellers are like, "Yeah, I don't care. My credit's already ruined." And they don't realize that whether it's a deed in lieu or a foreclosure, that the bank is now going to send something to the IRS for what's called the forgiveness of debt. And the IRS is now going to be your new debt collector and come after you for certain taxes that are owed. And if you've ever had to deal with the IRS, it's the worst group to have after you. At the very least, if you can help someone out of foreclosure, I mean, yeah, their credit, yeah, you helped her credit in terms of turning that around and making, you know, 7 on-time payments. But, I mean, she has no idea what you saved her in terms of the forgiveness of debt, because the IRS doesn't go away. They keep coming after you, and if they want it bad enough, they'll just start garnishing your wages or coming after bank accounts. And I don't think a lot of sellers and or investors realize that that's what will happen if the property goes through foreclosure.
Yeah, I don't think that's very wide known at all in the investor community, for sure, let alone, ordinary homeowners. So that's a good point. That's a great point. I mean, I hope our audience kind of recognizes like the win-win scenario throughout all of these transactions, throughout all of these deals. Everyone wins. So the seller wins, you, the investor, wins because you're able to make some money on it. And then, you know, you're in your scenario where you're doing a lease option, your tenant buyer wins, or, you know, whoever is buying their first home, right, to live in for many years to come, they're buying a great remodeled product. So I just want to point that out. And it's one of the great things about using creative financing is you can create those win-win scenarios again and again and again.
So Adam, you're an experienced investor. You've been doing this for a number of years. What, in terms of creative financing, where did you get your education? You know, how have you learned how to put these kinds of deals together?
Gosh. like I said, that very first one was kind of interesting to me to hear that. And then like I started out doing mortgages back in 2001 and did that up until like 2009 when everything fell apart. And so I had kind of financing experience from that. And as far as like learning more details on it, I'm a huge proponent of continuing education stuff. I mean, classes, taking a couple of different.
Oh.
Oops. Did that?
Yeah, we missed you on that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So you took some classes.
Yeah, just like classes and then just asking questions about it. And I mean, it's something that's been, I've got a friend, Greg Hansen, he's with RH Title, he teaches seller financing classes for the real estate agents. And he and I have gone to lunch many times kind of discussing stuff. And then, I guess Andy McFarland is one that I've learned a lot from as well on seller financing.
Yep. So networking, classes, I don't know, we were talking briefly about RIA events prior, but I don't know if you've gone and seen anything at any of those that might have been helpful over the years. But obviously, it's about putting numbers together and creating how the puzzle all fits together. What's going to work for you and potentially what could work for the seller?
Yeah, I've got some very complicated spreadsheets that I've built that will kind of put a few numbers in, and it just extrapolates everything out over what should happen over the next few years. And so those, I'm a huge fan of Excel.
There you go. That's awesome.
Well, and I think you kind of come across as a guy that is willing to just, you know, take action first, Adam. It's like, you know, some of the transactions, even talking through the couple ones that we just did, you don't know how all the pieces are going to fit together, but you're determined to make it work. And so what you do, and I think this is important for our listeners out there, is that you take action. You're like, hey, we can do that. Now let's just figure out how we can do that.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, just learning, Jeff mentioning the REA, is that really has been important for me. Like going to Slurria, it's where I met Andy and then went from there to learning about Andy's class and taking some stuff from him. It's where I heard about your podcast that has really helped me as well, is because we met at some REA at some point years ago. I don't even know whether it was Slurria or where it was that you and I actually met up, but I mean, long time ago because of one of those. And so the networking and getting out and meeting people and being willing to ask questions. I mean, admit that you don't know very much. I mean, yesterday I was last Wednesday, I taught a seller financing class here in Spanish Fork. And then yesterday I was at lunch with a real estate attorney asking more seller financing questions. So I mean, you're always really willing to learn.
When you start thinking that you know everything, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
For sure. I agree.
Well, thank you so much, Adam, for coming on. If you had to give a piece of advice to kind of the listeners out there, our audience that is just learning creative financing, what would that be? What would you tell them?
Kind of like you said, take action. Something sounds like a deal, get some advice. It may be. I mean, it's worth bouncing around the ideas and asking some other people. I mean, find some, I guess biggest advice would be to find some people to talk to that know what they're doing. Somebody to kind of follow and help get a little advice from and learn from.
Right. Absolutely. You got to have a good mentor. And for me, that's been Jeff, which is why we've created this podcast, because I wanted to document that journey of myself learning creative financing from someone who's been doing it for a long time.
It's great. I'm really glad you did. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Hope you've benefited from that in some way. Adam, if people want to reach out to you, if you don't mind, you want to leave some contact info?
Sure.
If you want, or if you don't want, yeah, that's fine too.
Facebook/ Peace of Mind Houses. That's PEACE. That's where, I've got a website as well, peaceofmindhouses.com, but not terribly active on that. Use the Facebook a lot more. And then email is Adam@ peaceofmindhouses.com.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Ping me on there. And it's been, while we've been talking, I've been having somebody sending me messages off of a Facebook ad saying, hey, this is the address. I need an offer ASAP. So kind of excited to get off the call and call them and see what they say.
There you go. We might have to have you back.
Right on, yeah. Cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much, Adam. We'll let you go. You can jump off. Guys, if you want to reach us, you can reach us on Facebook, the Creative Financing Podcast there. We also have a hotline. If you got any questions, you can give us a call, leave us a comment there, any questions you might have. That phone number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And also, we got a special video that Jeff put together, kind of a step-by-step instructional video on how to create offers on a single-family home. So if you want to get that, just text that same hotline number. Just text creative financing to that, or CFP, and it'll send you a link back to go watch that video. So highly recommend that. Jeff's very thorough, and he even walks you through the exit strategy and tells you how to run the numbers and shows you his letter of intent, and he just starts, you know, right from his CRM where the lead came in. So go check that out. Any last words, Jeff?
Always looking to work with people. One of two apprentice programs. If you're interested, give us a call on the hotline. I'll get back with you. We can discuss more in detail. And I've had really good feedback about that video. And so free, no strings attached. Check it out. Let me know what you guys think.
Awesome. Until next time, guys, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.